Hi, listener. This is part two of a two-part conversation with Anthony Giglio. So if you didn't hear part one, you may want to go back and listen to episode number 15, during which we discussed how to judge a wine in three sips. Otherwise, listen on, as this episode stands on its own, and will teach you why your enjoyment or non-enjoyment of every wine can be directly tied to the temperature at which you drink it. In other words, how warm or cold you drink a wine matters. Enjoy the brief musical interlude, and then we'll pick up the conversation right where we left off. This is the Inside Wine Podcast. I'm Joe Janisch, a certified specialist of wine and wine industry professional since 1996, giving you insider tips to make the right wine decisions.
Now, there is one thing that I think you're pretty adamant about when it comes to doing something right or wrong with wine, and that's temperature.
Yes. If you Google me, I think my wife pointed this out, like temperature and my name come up a lot. And a couple of times, I think it was in Pebble Beach Food and Wine, and at, of course, Aspen, the Food and Wine Classic, where I named the seminar the temperature tantrum, and it was because I do have a tantrum every time. Like, and I would like to take some small credit in the universe of especially in the New York universe and maybe Boston too. And I could explain that because I used to be the wine critic for Boston Magazine from New York, which was a big secret for almost 10 years in the early 2000s, where they would say, "Never tell anybody where you live, Anthony. You're from Southie, way Southie."
Almost like Jersey City, almost.
Well, Southie actually did look like Jersey City back then. Yeah. It reminded me of that before Barbara Lynch colonized it and made it like boutiques and fabulous. But I went to, I had two experiences in New York restaurants. I used to be the restaurant critic for about 15 years. So I was always out to eat. I had two experiences where I was served wine that was so warm, it was preposterous, just preposterous. And I would, you know, and I would say to the sommelier, like, and this is not like to not be a jerk, but I'm not announcing myself, and no one's figured out who I am. I'm just there having dinner, right? And I would play dumb fox with the sommeliers and say, "So I'm surprised, like, do you not serve this, a little cooler?" And the answer was always nope. Not like no, because we don't have room, which is in Manhattan especially, and this is before Brooklyn became, you know, so hot with restaurants. This is when New York, when Manhattan was the entire scene. Storage is so limited that, you know, like in Babbo, David Lynch used to joke to me, he's like, "You're sitting on the wine. All the banquettes open up and all the wine is there being stored under our hot tushes." So like wine storage is so scarce before they dug out the basement over at Babbo. So like, you know, of course they don't have a cellar for this. Like, don't be ridiculous when you're ordering your, you know. But I went back and I wrote to AJ Jacobs, my editor at Esquire, and I said, "Dude, I have a service piece that's going to humiliate every sommelier at the best restaurant. But that's not, it's not just to give a black eye, but it's also to say why and to teach consumers that we are all drinking our red wine warm for no logical reason." And I researched it and tried to figure out who wrote this rule that exists in every American's mind, but doesn't exist in any proven text. It is not written in any guidebook that says red wine should be served at room temperature. Like the closest I could come would be ambient in Victorian era wine guides written in freezing cold London in the 1850s. Like, that's, you know, great. 50 sounds awesome if that's the temperature of your living room because the fireplace is in the kitchen, right?
Right.
Yet it's like the game of telephone or whisper down the lane that this message has just been distorted and pushed down the line. And we all say the same thing. Like, whether it's with a firm room temperature or it's a room temperature kind of answer I get, but most people answer the same way. And I'm like, where did we get this? So I said to AJ, I'm like, I want to run around New York City with an instant thermometer, a digital thermometer, your credit card, a driver, and I'll bring the wingman. And I'm going to run to all the, you know, the Zagat 12 best restaurants, most popular by, chosen by New Yorkers, and take them all down. And it was a bloodbath because the article posit was, ask any New Yorker what the proper temperature is and you get the room temperature. Ask any sommelier. And just so you know, guys, at the best restaurants in New York City, the sommeliers are paid a lot of money. Like, some of them make $250,000 at these restaurants. And yet they can't deign to chill your wine for you because why bother? And if you ask a sommelier what the proper answer is for the room temperature, for red wine temperature, it's a paragraph. which begins at the lightest end of the spectrum, the high acid reds, the see-through reds like Gamay and Pinot Noir, 55 degrees. 55. That's pretty close, you know, that's pretty closer to the fridge than your living room. And then at the high end, the super tannic reds, the Riojas, the Barolos, the Cabernets, the Bordeaux, 65. So now 10 degrees is the window, nowhere near room temperature, which is 72-ish, right? Go, so how did we get there? And what happens when you cross 65? Like Kevin Zarelli would describe, the wine breaks up into four distinct parts. And it's fruit falls, acid falls, tannin rises, perception only, tannin rises, and alcohol rises. And you're left with a bitter, hot drink that might be how you're used to drinking it. But once you dunk it in an ice bucket for 5 minutes, everything changes. Everything changes. Take it out, pour a glass room temperature, put it in ice, pour a second glass after 5 minutes, put it in ice, take a third glass. It's a 10-minute experiment. You taste one, two, and three. Of course, as an insider now, we all know that one will be terrible. It will smell like alcohol. It'll smell like brandy. And it will taste hot and it'll warm your belly. Taste two and three, and now we're onto something. Oh my God, I had no idea this smelled like, you know, blueberries or blackberries or cherries or whatever. And then by three, so let's pretend if we were really being exact, the 5 minute wine is the Cabernet, because that just wants a little bit of a chill down to 65. And the Pinot Noir wants the 10 minutes. But I always say, I don't care about this, and you don't need an instant thermometer. It is scientifically proven, and you know, by the non-scientist me, that a good 5 minutes in quotes, that's as technical as it gets, a good 5 minutes in an ice bucket, which, tangent, ice bucket 101 is, an ice bucket without water is useless unless you plan to display oysters on it. So a proper ice bath, 5 minutes in a proper ice bath, and the wine tastes better. It could only get better from there. And then if you're already thinking ahead of me to, oh my God, what if I leave it in there for a half an hour? I've already thought of that. It's fine, because guess what, everyone? The good news is that a wine that's left in the ice too long will warm up. The bad news is the room temp red on the table with the candles and the heat on will also keep warming up. So I'd rather start at a cold baseline than a warm baseline. And you cannot ruin your wine, and you cannot skunk your wine by dunking it back in the ice the next day. Nothing will happen. Your wine literally could be left out in the backyard in a snow heap to freeze, and it will come back and be fine. You would never know the difference until you see the sediment at the end. That's the truth, by the way. Not that we want to encourage that, but you can't shock the wine too much. The article in Esquire was a marvelous bloodbath, because, and I so wish we had social media back then, because it would have gone crazy, I guarantee it. But I got so much great hate mail, real hate mail, except Jean-Luc Ledoux, our poor friend John, who died 2 years ago. But Jean-Luc Ledoux was at Danielle at the time, and then he went on to open Ledoux's wine shop in the West Village. But he wrote, "Dear Anthony, thank you for the ass kicking." And he went on to explain that he long agreed that we should have chilled the reds by the glass at Danielle, but was told by the management that it didn't matter because nobody asked. And I thought, that's so amazing. And it's so true. Who would dare to go to Danielle and tell anybody anything's wrong? Like, you know, even if their steak is overcooked, you're going to complain at Danielle. Like, that's such a French situation there. Like, you're in this temple of gastronomy and you don't dare to be the American who's like, I want my steak cooked better. Like, you know, like you don't tell them how you want it. You just smile and say everything is parfait. So he wrote and said, "You will be happy to know that we have sacrificed four employee lockers for the new,
wow,
the new wine cooler that went in." And because the numbers, Joe, I didn't even tell you, the numbers, I told you, 65 is where we hold the line.
Yeah.
Only one restaurant did it.
Wow.
And you won't be surprised to know it was Le Bernardin.
There you go.
But all the other, I always joke, all the other Frenchies went to hell and back. I mean, like, I went to Picholin, and they actually had a bottle of wine on a ceramic column draped in black velvet behind the bar. And a halogen beam coming right down over it to slow cook it all night. And I said to the bartender, like, "What is that?" And he's like, "That is Quintessa, a very rare biodynamic, bloody, bloody, bloody. Tonight we're offering it as a special, $42 for 2 ounces.
Oh.
And I was like, "Wow." And he's like, "Shall I?" And I'm like, "Yes, you shall." And it, you know, it was like 78 degrees. Le Grenouille, which is, you know, like I always joke, like if you don't know about Le Grenouille, you definitely didn't grow up in New York City, where that was the ultimate closer. If you couldn't close the deal on a date after Le Grenouille, you don't ever call back. Like, just forget it. It's like the most romantic, beautiful restaurant in New York City. I didn't plan to go to Le Grenouille. They were like number 14 on the list. And I was supposed to stop at 12, but I'm literally walking to Le Bernardin past Le Grenouille. And my friend, who used to be the bartender at Soho Kitchen and Wine Bar, which doesn't exist anymore, where they used to have 100 wines by the glass. Do you remember that, Joe?
I remember. Yeah, I remember that.
That was a great place because you got to share glasses. It broke the intimacy open to share glasses together. How pre-COVID of us. But Brian is standing on the sidewalk in front of Le Grenouille having a cigarette break. And he's like, what are you doing? And I didn't tell him. I'm like, oh, I'm just running around. He's like, come on in for a glass, please. I want to pour you a glass of wine. And he poured me an 88 degree glass of a crappy Van de Pay French Merlot for $18, which wasn't so outrageous, the price.
For Le Grenouille.
But yeah, it's at Le Grenouille, and it's 88 degrees. 88 degrees.
Oh my goodness.
The last one I'll tell you is I go to the Four Seasons, the old Four Seasons, and they pour me a bottle of Domaine Chandon Pinot Meunier, which is like a unicorn. They don't sell that. You have to buy that at the winery. Like, they have the three wines that comprise their famous sparkling wine at Domaine Chandon. They have Chardonnay, Pinot Meunier and Pinot Noir that you could actually buy varietally bottled at the winery, but they don't sell them outside of the winery. So it's a pretty big coup. I'm like, wow. That's amazing. And then, so the two glasses are Rancho Zabaco Zinfandel and Domaine Chandon Pinot Meunier, both $17. I have no idea why they were the same price when they were so clearly not on par. But anyway, they were about 80 degrees. And I say a euphemism for the temperature of something warm that leaves the body. And the bartender looks over and says, excuse me, did you have a comment about that wine? And I was like, oh, bring it, dude. I'm like, yes, if you'd like to join the conversation, I was just saying that I couldn't get over how hot this wine is. And he said, sir, if you didn't know, white wine is served chilled. Red wine is served room temperature. And I slapped my palm on my forehead, like, you know, Mo, Larry, and Curly. And I was like, ah, oh, I always get that wrong. Thank you so much. Check, please. And like, off we went. Like, and this was everywhere, just this exasperating stupidity of the bar staff and the indifference of the sommeliers. And when I interviewed some of them, telling them the article was coming out, and I'm very sorry, but you are going to be made to look stupid here. Can you tell me why? And they would say over and over again, nobody asks. And that's, again, because we're taught by no one in particular that it's room temperature. And I'm telling you that once you chill this wine, and we do it together when I do tastings, I do all these virtual tastings now, and I send instructions ahead, please note, please chill all four bottles, the two whites and the two reds. Yes, even the reds, I will explain. And then I ask for a show of hands how many people were shocked, and almost all the people raise their hands because they can't believe it's possible. And there's always the few who chime in, like, I always put ice in my wine. And I'm like, wait, whoa. I understand why you would do that. But let's talk about, and by the way, I'll go on a tangent and say, please, please freeze some grapes in Ziploc bags and use them as ice cubes. They're amazing edible ice cubes that you could, they leach no water into the wine, but do not use those plastic refreezable citrus wedges. I was at a party where somebody put frozen flamingos into my glass. I was like, what? Anyway, so my temperature tantrum, everyone tastes and tastes and tastes with me through the temperatures. And then I'm telling you, Joe, you could never, and I said this, you will never go back. You can never go back to room temperature red. And inevitably someone will say, well, you could pull that off when you go into a restaurant and ask for an ice bucket. But what am I supposed to do? I'm like, how do you order your burger? How do you order your steak? How do you order your coffee at Starbucks? You are completely capable and 100% entitled to offer your wine how you would like it. Too bad if they don't want to do it. You could always pull out the Jersey Boy card, which is, I'm sorry, I thought you worked for tips. Never mind. I mean, that usually snaps everyone to attention. But I'm like, I go, don't do it like a jerk. you know, I use a different word if I'm with real friends, right? But like, it's like, just say, I'm sorry, can we chill this down a bit? Do you mind if we chill this down a bit? I like it a little bit chilled. And you're like, I even take it even further, like, I'm crazy that way. Like, I like it a little cold, you know, what do I know? But like, you know, clearly because you don't know, because you don't know how to do your job. But like, I don't say that, even though the rage is simmering under the surface. But that's what you do. You just say like, I'm sorry, can we chill this down a bit? Do you mind? But Joe, I'm going to tell you that in 20 years, it has changed. And in fact, New York Magazine asked me 5 years later, maybe four and a half, to, it was in 2005 in a summer edition. I could see it in my head. But they asked me to go around and do the experiment again. And there were new players on the scene by then. Babbo had opened up and trying to think of where else. I think I went to some place in Soho, trying to think which one. But like, I ran around. Per Se had opened with their five temperature controlled wine rooms. I mean, so like they gave Le Brun a run for the money there. But the temperatures had fallen into the low 70s and high 60s, which is, you know, a great direction to go in, right? Like, and but you know, only Le Brun and Per Se passed with flying colors, but everyone else was still a little warm. But you know, like Babbo said to me, like, listen, we take great efforts to chill the wine overnight. We put them in the cooler downstairs. If you come at 9 o'clock, they've been out for 3 hours. That's not our problem. Yeah, sorry, but that's just, but what they did was they were chilling marble tiles, floor tiles in the coolers overnight. And they would put them on the bar and stand the bottles on them to hold some chill for a while, which I thought was really a nice effort on that part. But like, Joe, the smartest service I have ever seen to this day was at Aziz. Do you remember Aziz on 17th Street, Anita Lowe's place?
Yeah.
When I reviewed that place in a townhouse, the third floor was the dining room. So it made running down to the basement insane, like for the poor Sams who had to go run the wine. And there was, again, you're in a townhouse and there's not any room. It was an open kitchen, which was new back then. They had a tiny waiter station that was sort of the dividing line between the dining room and the front tables towards the kitchen. And it was built with a custom basin, all in marble and stainless steel. And the basin, let's say it was 4 or 6 inches deep. So let's say 6 inches deep, and they would pour ice in there. And then a grate sat over it that sunk down to 2 inches. So that when you filled it with water to the top, you had a puddle of ice cold water 2 inches high that wouldn't destroy wine labels.
Oh, smart.
So you bring wine up from downstairs, all the wines by the glass and even the wines that were in service, if they took it away from the table and brought it over to the side, they would refresh all the bottles in just 2 inches of ice water. And then you would see them, they would pick the bottle up, they would dry the bottom, and then holding it by the neck, do that swirling motion where you try and bring everything, you know, you swirl the bottle together so you bring it all together because the bottom is the cold and the warm is up top. And it was brilliant. I mean, it was probably a ridiculous fortune to make that custom sink, but I remember thinking like, oh my God, I would like that in my home bar. Like that would be amazing instead of setting up, you know, the big ice bucket and everything gets wet too. Like we have to be very careful in service not to let labels get ruined. So you have to put wine in plastic bags and then put them into the ice bath so that it comes out looking like it never saw, you know, water. And all those things that you do, you know, in fine dining. But I don't know. I just think that like once you teach people about the ice bucket and 5 minutes is all it takes, it really is no big deal. Like don't use the fridge, it'll take too long. Don't use the freezer, you'll forget it and make a mess. But if you are super in a hurry and don't have an ice bucket, wet a dish towel, wrap it around the bottle and put it in the freezer and it will get cold pretty quickly.
Yeah. And people have always been, you know, when I tell people to do the same thing, you're like, oh, is that going to ruin the wine? Like, no, it's not going to. In the wine, like you explained, it'll be fine.
You can't skunk it.
Yeah. And if you don't have a proper bucket, I've used pots.
Right, a pasta pot.
Yeah, I use a pasta pot, lobster pot. I use a beach pail, like anything. Just water it. You know, it's just you. You're not like...
Yeah, the kitchen sink. I've been to yard parties where you see like the big keg coolers filled with ice and all the beer is jammed into them and the wines are in the next one.
Yep.
And I'm the one who has to walk in and grab the garden hose and fill them with water.
Yep.
So they actually start to work. Like they're not working.
Yes.
You know, like those bottles on top are literally like raw bar sitting on top of the ice.
Yeah. And that is the key, the ice bath, not just ice. You need the ice bath. And I'm so glad that you talked about this because... To your point, if you were at a restaurant and your steak came and it was cold, like you'd send it back and tell them you got to warm this up. Like, you know, this is not the way I like to eat my steak or, you know, and it does change the way the wine tastes immensely. And if the example that I always like to think about, I'm one of those people who even in college, I didn't like cold pizza. I'm sorry. I don't like it. I like my pizza hot out of the oven. I don't like it ice cold because it tastes different. And it's the same thing with wine. And there's no reason why you shouldn't enjoy wine and really get the flavors that you want. And, you know, you mentioned it. When I'm at a restaurant, I have no qualms. I have no pride. I'm like, if the red wine comes out and it's room temperature, I say, could you please bring over the bucket? And they look at me, they look at me funny. And I'm like, and I just shrug. I'm like, sorry, this is the way I want to drink it. And I just put it right there and it's all good.
Joe, I have one more thing to add to that. The uber ice bath is made with salt.
Yes.
Which again, this is for extra points if you really want to go the distance into whatever vessel, into the pasta pot or the flower vase or whatever you're using as your ice bucket du jour. If you add a cup of kosher salt and then a little bit of warm water, believe it or not, a little warm water to dissolve, whisk it or fork it, whatever you need to do, stir it in, make a slurry, and then dump as much ice as you can on top of it, and then run the cold water in, and you create a thermonuclear bath that will take a bottle down to 17 degrees in 5 minutes. I'm not kidding. And I don't know if you, Joe, those, have you ever used a Yeti cooler? I have like two sizes now. The Yeti coolers are, I don't know what the secret technology is to Yeti in general, even though they're fantastic. Wine tumblers are great to drink out, to bring, you know, bring outside. Now that we're, you know, eating outside during this insanity, we bring our Yeti glasses with us everywhere, these like little wine tumblers, but they're so good, especially in the summer where they kept the wine nice and cold.
It's a good idea.
If you put that into, if you make that in a pot and then dump it into a Yeti cooler and then, you know, zip it up, 3 days later, there's still ice in the brine.
Wow.
I mean, they're,
holy cow,
they're literally the refrigerators. Like, it's unbelievable how well they work. But I'll say that to people, if you use, even if you use like an Igloo cooler as your ice bath for a party, because it's insulated and you even, and the top is open, fine. But even though it's insulated, because it's insulated, that ice won't melt for hours and hours and hours. And it seems counterintuitive because you've added salt and salt melts ice. But no, you'll hear the ice seizing as you're filling it with water. And then I don't know the science, but at some point it stops. And it's like this thing is held in stasis where you have from 37 degrees, it goes down to 17. Like, you could hurt your hand in there. Like, you don't want to dunk your arm in there for too long. But that's how you could chill champagne in 5 minutes.
I vaguely remember something from high school chemistry, something about salt making the freezing temperature of water go down or up. I don't remember. That's, I think there's some science that someone knows.
Right. And then like, there's a point where it stops melting and it holds it. Like, it's crazy. But I could keep going and I digress a million times. So I think we've covered temperature.
Enough. I didn't realize the temperature tantrum was going to be this big. I think it's going to be its own episode. I think I cut it in half.
I tell you, Joe, and I say it again, and I get emails all the time. By the way, when I said to you about making three glasses and 5 minutes in each glass, I tell that to people. I'm like, whoever's in your pod and you could share glasses with, or then set up some Piper cups for after, but like, do the three glasses. Then take those three glasses into another room, the living room where your friends are, the dining room where everyone's waiting. Leave the bottle in the kitchen and say, let's have some fun. I can't decide which wine we should have first tonight. Which do you like? And then I always joke, you of course know that whoever likes number one has the worst taste because they like the hot red. But the battle between two and three, and it could get heated among people who like their wine. I go, and then while they're all talking, walk back in with the bottle and say, by the way, all from this bottle at three different temperatures. And when I assure you 1,000% that not one person will ever believe that those three glasses are from the same bottle of wine, they cannot wrap their heads around it. And I get emails, Joe, all the time, people following up saying, I did it, you were right. I did it, you were right. People lost their minds. Like, there's no way that that's possible. I'm like, all it takes is 5 minutes to change everything. And you can't go back. You really can't.
No, you can't. And I think I told you this offline. My wife finally saw your whole presentation on wine and the temperature tantrum. And, you know, we did it at home and I did exactly what you said. We did three different glasses at three different temperatures. And ever since that day, I say, all right, you know, what are we having for dinner? Okay. Oh, honey, we're going to have this, this nice St. Francis Infidel tonight. And she'll say, are you going to chill it down? are you going to put it in the fridge or are you going to put it in the ice bath? And they're like, all right, honey, don't worry. We're going to have it at the perfect temperature, just like Anthony said.
There it is. My job is done here. Thank you. Thank you, Joe.
So, Anthony, this has been really awesome. I learned a lot. I know that our listener now feels more empowered about wine. And you also have some services that you offer for consumers and private clients and businesses and things like that. Why don't you tell us now some of the things that you do and how people can get in touch with you and where they can find you on social media?
Thanks, Joe. So I've pivoted completely by force, of course, to virtual wine tastings, which I had never done in my entire life and didn't even know what Zoom was before April.
It was a TV show, right? When you were a kid.
Yes.
Channel 13.
Yes. Oh my God. I forgot about Zoom.
Zoom, 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 Zoom.
Wait, is that where we got the Habai for Benz?
Maybe.
Remember there was a whole language we learned in there, like a Pig Latin-y kind of thing that you spoke in Zoom. I remember this now. My sisters and I used to do it.
I think it was. It's either that or Electric Company, one or the other.
You added a B into every word. So it was Habai for Benz.
Might have been Zoom.
So I had to cancel about 14 events in March. They went down like dominoes and I just was paralyzed with fear that I'd never work again. But as Zoom started to take off as a meeting medium, just among people at work, my wife, who literally saved me from despair, was like, get off the couch and figure out Zoom. Just go play with Zoom. Go figure out what it is, sign up and figure it out. And I have some ideas. And she was the one who said to me, like, go to everyone who canceled and say, let's try something different. And that's when I started to do Zoom tastings. And I will give credit to David Landgraf, who's an event planner in New York City, who also came to me at the same time and just said, you know, he and all his fellow event planners in New York were all unemployed. And he said, you know, we have a pretty strong group of about 80 people who get together for yoga and what is it like a team building? And we're trying all different things just to keep the conversation going and to stay in touch. Could we come up with a wine tasting? And I thought, great, how do we get wine in everyone's hands? And he said, let's not put wine in their hands for the first time. Let's just let everyone bring their own bottle. But that was a great practice to get people. And we talked about sparkling wine. I said, everyone come with something sparkling, because I had a gamble that everybody has sparkling wine in their house, whether it's just the Prosecco du jour or the champagne that they're saving for an important day. And I reminded everyone that we're in a pandemic and today was the day to open the champagne you're saving for something special. And it worked really well. But it gave me the practice and the trial and error of how do these things work, look, feel. And I've honed it into a machine where I've hosted dozens and dozens and dozens since May, and I have a lot more planned through the fall. So how do you find me? My name, if you could spell my last name, you could find me a million ways. So the speed bump of G-I-G-L-I-O is what trips everyone up. But at Anthony Giglio on Instagram, let's be friends. I follow back if you follow me. At Anthony Giglio on Twitter, which I try to avoid because it's very noisy there, but you could DM me. My email is anthony@anthonygiglio.com. And my website is anthonygiglio.com. So if you can't find me after all that, we have a problem. We have a big problem.
Well, you can also, listener, you can swipe left, right, up or down. I'm not sure where your app does. And we'll have all that contact information in the show notes. So you'll be all covered.
Yeah. Oh, John, there's one other thing.
Yeah.
If you Google me and the words the moth, you could hear the story that I told in the moth a few years back, which is a pretty, pretty wild story.
I'm actually looking forward to listening it now that I've learned about it. I'm definitely going to listen to it probably today. It's going to be awesome.
I look forward to your reaction.
Thanks so much for listening to Anthony Giglio's Temperature Tantrum. And again, if you missed the first part of our conversation, go back and listen to episode 15 when Anthony teaches how to judge a wine in 3 sips. All of Anthony's details are in the show notes, including a link to his moth performance, which has nothing to do with wine, but is absolutely, positively a must listen. It will bring you to tears, both for happy reasons and sad reasons. But back to this episode. If you enjoyed this conversation, please tell a friend. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Inside Wine Podcast so you can get the next episode automatically delivered to your smartphone for free. In the meantime, for more wine empowerment, visit wine365.com. And remember, wine is food. It comes from a place. Enjoy it responsibly.